everyone. Welcome back to Pretty in Punk, the punk rock podcast. I'm your host, Fiona, your girly girl guide to the world of punk and rock music and everything in between. Today, I want to take you on a journey through some of the iconic punk rock venues that have shaped the genre. Punk may have started as an underground movement, but there are so many legendary venues that gave punk a home, a stage, and a voice. These venues weren't just places to play, they became a crucial role in punk culture and punk's rebellion and energy. I'm dividing this episode into two parts. This week, I am focusing on US venues, and next week, I will be focusing on UK venues. In today's part, we will be diving into CBGB in New York, Whiskey A Go-Go in LA, and Max's Kansas City in New York. I want to explore how these spaces became more than just walls and a stage. They became birthplaces of a musical revolution. Let's start off with none other than CBGB, a place that I could not have made this episode without. CBGB, which actually stands for Country Bluegrass Blues, was founded in 1973 by Hilly Crystal in New York's Bowery neighborhood. Although the venue was originally intended to showcase the genres in its name, it soon became an incubator for the budding punk rock scene in the 1970s. CBGB's gritty, no-frills kind of attitude made it an atmosphere that attracted an array of artists and encouraged underground musicians who sought out a place to play without commercial pressure. And unlike a lot of other contemporary venues at this time, Hilly Crystal and CBGB really encouraged artists to play original compositions, unlike a lot of other places that really only encouraged covers. This openness to new sounds drew a host of musicians that would define the punk and the alternative rock genres as a whole. This included the Ramones, Patti Smith, Talking Heads, Television, Blondie, and so many countless others. CBGB really became a cultural landmark for punk music. It served as a platform for artists who challenged the mainstream conventions with their raw, stripped-down sounds and their innovative lyrics. They were showcasing something that no one else had heard before. As more musicians began to play and gain recognition at CBGB, it became a cultural landmark for punk music. CBGB's influence was really solidified as bands associated with it started to gain recognition on a wider scale. And so many of these artists are to thank for carving out a new genre of music that was never heard before, that was categorized by its rebellious energy, anti-establishment themes, and their DIY ethics. And for example, the Ramones' debut album that was released in 1976 and Patti Smith's Horses that was released in 1975 were both albums that really came to symbolize this movement as a whole. These acts, as well as many others, really helped solidify not only a more alternative rock sound, but the punk rock sound marked by their fast tempos, their short song lengths, and their direct lyricism. Not only were the bands playing on stage iconic and such catalysts for the punk movement, the venue itself and its aesthetic was really a visual aid for the punk movement. I mean, the walls were plastered with flyers and graffiti, and this whole visual look of CBGB really became a symbol of punk's rough around the edges, gritty attitude. And going further beyond the music, CBGB also played a crucial role in punk culture, punk fashion, and punk's attitude. The classic, stereotypical, quote-unquote punk look, categorized by torn jeans, leather jackets, DIY hairstyles, this grew organically out of the scene. And these were influenced not only by the club patrons, but also like bands for the Ramones, who were often seen wearing leather jackets and tight worn jeans. And these punk DIY ethics extended even more beyond the music, with things like independent zines, underground art, and even fashion designers who took inspiration from CBGB and the punk aesthetic as a whole. This culture of the self-expression and the anti-establishment attitude, it really laid the groundwork for numerous punk and rock subgenres alike, such as hardcore punk, alternative rock, and it inspired a lot of other artists who saw in CBGB a validation of nonconformity and creativity outside of the mainstream. Even though CBGB sadly closed its doors as a music venue in 2006, its legacy still lives on in punk rock's influence on music, culture, and art. In 2008, fashion designer John Varvatos purchased the former site of CBGB, and his storefront still remains today. Now, although this once bustling hub of punk music has now become a designer store, it still stays true to the integrity of the venue. It keeps a lot of the same wall art and posters and graffiti that have been on the walls for numerous years. The store has also made a great effort to pay tribute to this punk landmark with showcasing posters from concerts and other rock and roll memorabilia. So although the original CBGB is no longer what it used to be, this club is remembered for not only hosting legendary bands, but for also its role in fostering an inclusive artistic community that celebrated individuality and nonconformity. Many contemporary punk and rock and indie musicians cite CBGB as an influence, and they view it as the ultimate symbol of what punk music should be. It's raw, it's honest, and it's unapologetic. As a result, CBGB remains a cultural icon, and it is often remembered as the birthplace of punk rock, representing the power of music to disrupt norms and connect people through shared rebellion. Next up, let's talk about another New York-based venue that is another birthplace of punk. Max's Kansas City was opened in 1965 by Mickey Ruskin, and it was another key venue in New York City cultural landscape that played a pivotal role in shaping the development of punk music. Max's Kansas City really became an essential gathering spot for the downtown New York music scene. Though it was a space that was catered to a range of music genres, including rock and roll and glam rock, it later became a crucial hub for the punk rock scene. Bands like the Velvet Underground played there regularly, including their last show with Lou Reed before he quit the band in the summer of 1970. It was a home base for the glam rock and rock and roll scene, which included David Bowie, Iggy Pop, Lou Reed, Alice Cooper, the New York Dolls, just to name a few, but there are countless others. And while her band didn't play there until the second incarnation of Max's Kansas City, Patti Smith and her boyfriend frequently visited the club almost nightly from 1969 through the early 1970s. And at this time, this was before the emerging punk rock scene, and they were not yet booking punk rock bands. Now, by the end of 1974, Max's had started to lose popularity among the artsy rock and roll crowd because the glam rock scene that was so prevalent at Max's Kansas City was starting to go on a slow decline, and it then closed in December of that year. However, Max's Kansas City reopened in 1975 under the ownership of Tommy Dean Mills, who initially thought he would make it more of a disco. But then Peter Crowley, who had been booking bands at CBGB, a lot of the early punk bands that played there, he was then hired to book at Max's. And then under Crowley's guidance, Max's then became a birthplace of punk. Max's regularly featured bands including Cherry Vanilla, Wayne County and the Electric Chairs, Ruby and the Rednecks, The Offs, The Fast, Suicide, The New York Dolls, Patti Smith, The Ramones, The Misfits, and so many others. And this list also includes out-of-town bands such as The Runaways and The Damned. Even Sid Vicious of the Sex Pistols played his US solo gigs at Max's as well. This club's gritty ambiance, its late-night atmosphere, and its reputation for fostering this anything-goes, very artistic kind of spirit, it attracted this very eclectic mix of artists, and these people would later become iconic figures in punk. The venue's significance in the evolution of punk, it really lies in the way that it nurtured this DIY attitude that later became so crucial to the genre. Bands that played at Max's Kansas City were often rebelling against the mainstream music scene and its elaborate production and its very corporate control, and they started opting for this more raw DIY sound that punk is synonymous with. Max's became a stage for this emerging punk scene and a place where people could experiment with their sound. Max's Kansas City was also so important because it provided a space where artists of different genres could mingle and coexist. And especially genres like glam rock, rock and roll, and punk rock, they all lived together at Max's in perfect harmony. And this cross-pollination really helped to blur the lines between different musical styles. Many of the bands that played at Max's took a lot of these punk elements and used them in their sound, while also taking inspiration from genres like glam rock. Artists like Iggy Pop and the Stooges, who had a really big influence on punk's attitude, they performed regularly at Max's, as well as people like Patti Smith, who performed poetry and rock music as well. These performances were not only musically influential, they also represented the spirit of rebellion and rejection of the mainstream that punk would later be known for. Max's Kansas City became legendary for the way that it created this community and culture of artists. The club's role in the birth of punk was crucial in shaping the genre's aesthetic, and the shows that were played at Max's were often categorized by the sense of spontaneity and rebellion, and refraining from conventional song structures and sounds. These elements would later become very solidifying characteristics of punk and bands like the Ramones, Television, and Blondie. Playing at Max's really solidified their place in punk and rock history. And like CBGB, Max's influence extended beyond the music. It inspired the DIY ethics and attitude that would resonate throughout punk culture and serve as the foundation for independent zines, fashion, and activism. Sadly, like CBGB, Max's Kansas City is no longer with us. It closed its doors in 1981, but its influence on punk music stands the test of time. Its final show was in November of 1981. Bad Brains were the headliners of the final night at Max's Kansas City, and the Beastie Boys opened for them. The venue's legacy lives on through the artists that graced its stage and the creative atmosphere that it fostered. It helped transform New York City into this global center for punk rock. And even after its closure, Max's Kansas City continues to be remembered as a birthplace of punk. It was a place where musicians could be free from the mainstream music industry and create art on their own terms. And it also fostered this relationship between so many genres and subgenres like glam rock and punk rock commingling. Today, Max's Kansas City remains as a symbol of punk rock's rebellion and New York's gritty underground music scene. The last venue that I want to touch on in today's episode is actually the only venue standing out of these three, and it's the only West Coast venue that I'll be talking about today. Let's dive into the Whiskey A Go-Go in Los Angeles, California. The Whiskey A Go-Go, located on the Sunset Strip in West Hollywood, Los Angeles, is one of the most iconic live music venues in rock history. Opening in 1964, it became a hotspot for bands of the 60s and 70s, showcasing the rise of the American rock scene with bands like The Doors, The Byrds, and Buffalo Springfield, who were gracing its stages. But as the venue evolved, it eventually became a key site in the evolution of punk rock. In the early months of 1975, the famed Whiskey A Go-Go was struggling, and seemingly its heyday was behind it. Once a thriving venue that hosted bands such as The Doors and Led Zeppelin, the Whiskey started to face financial troubles as record labels shifted their promotional focus to arena tours. And owner Elmer Valentine closed the club temporarily and started to experiment with some very unsuccessful formats such as cabaret shows. And soon after that, the Whiskey was really starting to lose its relevance as a whole, and it appeared that it would be headed for obscurity. However, Valentine was not ready to give up. He ended up reaching out to former Spirit manager Marshall Burrell to revive the club, this time with a radical new concept. Instead of booking these major label acts that were once headlining the Whiskey, they decided to feature emerging local bands to play punk and new wave music that no one had heard of yet. At the time, these genres were unsuited for the mainstream radio, but they were starting to gain traction. Burrell then enlisted the help of the Runaways manager and Los Angeles music entrepreneur Kim Foley and promoter Rodney Bingenheimer, both deeply connected to the LA scene, to produce these shows and draw in younger audiences. By the summer of 1976, punk and new wave had come to the forefront in New York and London, and it began creeping into the LA scene as well. Soon, the Whiskey A Go-Go began transforming into the heart of LA's punk scene, despite fierce competition from newer clubs. And what was once a hub for the rock and roll scene of the 60s and 70s became a key site for the evolution of punk in LA. It offered a stage for these new bands to showcase this raw, rebellious punk energy. The Whiskey hosted some of the first ever punk performances performances in LA, and it featured bands like The Germs, X, The Weirdos, Dead Kennedys, Fear, and so many others. These performances were crucial in solidifying the Whiskey's place in the punk world and LA's punk scene as well. It fostered this connection between the aggression of punk rock and LA's sunny, carefree attitude. And the Whiskey's gritty yet glamorous atmosphere became a reflection of punk's ability to disrupt and redefine the music scene. The Whiskey A Go Go was really a crucial place in shaping punk's image and aesthetic. I mean, the venue's already long history in the rock scene already made it the symbol of rebellion and musical experimentation. So by the time punk was emerging, it really became a natural fit. Punk fans embraced the Whiskey's underground appeal, and performances at the Whiskey often captured this chaotic, DIY, rebellious spirit. The contrast between the very glitzy, commercialized environment of the Sunset Strip and the very DIY, rebellious punk vibe of the Whiskey, this created a very unique tension that was emblematic of the punk movement in Los Angeles. The Whiskey became a space where punk's fashion, attitude, and music were allowed to flourish without compromise, and it helped cultivate the punk style that included clothing, the brightly colored hair, and the complete disregard for mainstream norms. The venue's historical impact is also seen in its role as a launchpad for these bands that would go on to play punk music globally. Bands like The Germs and X gained recognition in LA's underground scene, and their time at the Whiskey helped propel them into a global audience. This was crucial in bringing California's punk scene to the forefront. It had faster tempos, surf influences, and a blend of humor and anger. And those themes can be seen in later punk bands that came around in the 80s and 90s, also hailing from California, such as Descendants, Green Day, The Offspring, Bad Religion, NOFX, and so on and so on. Though punk's heyday at the Whiskey A Go Go was relatively brief, the venue's lasting impact on the genre is undeniable. The Whiskey played a key role in establishing LA as this central point in the American punk rock movement. It created a space where punk could thrive and evolve. The venue's contribution to punk music, both in LA and globally, remain a key part in its legacy, and it proves that even the most iconic rock venues can become grounds for punk's rebellion and energy. And in fact, punk bands still play there today. I mean, for example, Black Flag is set to play there in January of 2025. Overall, the Whiskey A Go Go really is such a crucial birthplace of punk because it hosted bands that really push these boundaries of the genre. Now, with all that being said, there are so many other venues in the US and beyond that really became these birthplaces of punk and really helped to create this emerging punk rock scene in the US and beyond. And again, next week, I will be talking about UK punk venues, but I feel like I could not have made this episode without these three in particular. These really are just crucial in the punk world and punk culture. Clearly, I love punk history. I really do. And I think if you are another punk historian like myself, these are just three venues that you need to know, you need to have on your radar. And I would love to even do another part of this and talk about more punk venues in the US and other countries as well that really became these stepping stones in the punk movement. Now, to end out today's episode, if you didn't know, I have a Song of the Week playlist, and each week I feature a new song, either a song that I'm loving or a song that kind of goes with the theme of today's episode. And for this week's Song of the Week, I've chosen the song New York by the Sex Pistols. And I wanted to choose this song because the lyrics do mention Max's Kansas City, and that's one of the venues that we talked about today. So I thought it would be perfect to put on this playlist and shine some light on this song. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Sid Vicious played there during his solo US tour, so it just makes perfect sense that this had to be my Song of the Week. If you want to check out my Song of the Week playlist, you can find it on Spotify. I'll have it linked in the show notes. If you're listening on a streaming platform like Spotify or Apple Music, if you're watching on YouTube, it'll be in the YouTube description. And it is on Spotify because I myself am a Spotify user. If you want to follow along my podcast on TikTok or Instagram, you can find me at Pretty in Punk Pod. And there I will post short clips from each episode and some updates. So be sure to follow and stay tuned. If you want to listen on streaming, you can find me on all streaming platforms, Pretty in Punk, the punk rock podcast, platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts, I will be there. You can also watch video episodes on YouTube as well. And I post a new episode every Friday on all streaming platforms. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.